Much Charlotte for reading. Now, quite a few years ago, before I was married, I used to co-own a house with a friend in London, and we had a flatmate there, a roommate, and he went off to Miami to work there for 6 months. And what we did is we sublet his room, and we used all that money rather than spend it on the house, which probably needed it. We used all that money to go off on a weekend trip to Miami to see our friends. I had never really been to Miami before, and we went there, and it was spring break. I don't know, Finley, if you've been there during spring break, but anyway, it was packed full of people. Loads of people were there, and it wasn't just sort of ordinary people. It was sort of beautiful, rich, powerful people, and they were seeking to show that they were trying to impress people. So some of them were driving around in ridiculously large cars that you didn't really need to be that big. But anyway, they're driving around, and they kept sort of going round and round. And it was quite clear that they were trying to impress us, that they were powerful, they were rich. And then actually, the best part of the weekend, I did manage to do a bit of windsurfing. But once again, there were these huge boats. And the thing is, I think I did feel a bit out of place there. But I think when people want to impress, and when people want to show how powerful they are, they seek to impress others. It's the same with a company. When they seem to be doing very well, they try and build the tallest building. I remember when I worked in Lloyd's of London, and they developed this sort of building where everything's on the outside. And it was really to try and impress people. It's also this similar with a country. I think we saw it this week, actually. Is it Myanmar? When a country wants to show its power, they get their military to march and parade on past. They have sort of all their armies and their missiles, and the message they're kind of create is very clear that we are a country, we're powerful, we're not to be reckoned with. But what I want us to look at today, in those readings that Norman and Charlotte kindly read to us, is how does Jesus show his power? And also, how does he use his power? But how does he show his power? Now, in that reading we just had, and also we saw it in the video that Ed kindly put together, you've got this extraordinary picture. You've got all these people in Jerusalem very excited. There's a tremendous buzz. And Jesus is beginning to approach Jerusalem. And the reason why they're excited is because they know that Jesus is some sort of king. They know that he's a king. They also seen him demonstrate, some of them have witnessed him demonstrating extraordinary power. I mean, if you read Mark's gospel, you've seen that Jesus has shown power over nature. He's even brought someone back from the dead. And they know also that he's a king, and he's coming to set up his kingdom. And they're expecting Jesus to come and kick out the Romans, who were the superpower of the day, and establish his kingdom in Jerusalem. And so there's this tremendous excitement, and it was great to see that on the video. You can really see the buzz. But the extraordinary thing is, as we heard in that reading, as Jesus comes, he doesn't come with an army. He doesn't come in a chariot. Instead, he comes on a donkey, humbly on a donkey. It looks kind of weak. It doesn't look very impressive at all. And if it wasn't for that prophecy that Norman read out, which was written 600 years before Jesus, you wouldn't realize who Jesus was. But actually, that prophecy helps us realize that although he looks weak, he is God's chosen king, and he is humble. And Jesus is actually showing his power by being weak. Now, as I said, that's not the way we think at all. It doesn't look very impressive to us. And this was highlighted to me the other day, last week, in fact, in class. One of the my students, he put up his hand and he said, "If God is real, why doesn't he show up?" And I have to admit, at that point, I was kind of slightly frustrated, because throughout this term, I've been teaching them the doctrine of the incarnation, the belief that God has taken on flesh and has made himself known to us as Jesus. And I just thought, oh, it's one of those awful moments where you sort of spent all this time teaching, and you thought, oh gosh, he really hasn't listened to a word I've said. But actually, on reflection, I realized why he said that, why he hasn't realized that Jesus is God. And it's simple, because I think as human beings, we think if God was to show up, you know, the person who's created this world, who created the universe, surely he would come down in power with shock and awe and make it clear to everyone. But instead, God comes as Jesus, humbly on a donkey. And now this is the opposite the way the world works. I mean, as I was preparing this, I was thinking, just imagine what it'd be like when Boris Johnson won the election. He turned up to Downing Street riding on a donkey. I mean, it would look, the media would be having a field day. But that's the point. Jesus comes to us. God comes to us in weakness. And that is his power. And I want to see that that is true power. Because we're going to see actually that it's through this weakness and through this power that he establishes the greatest kingdom that has ever been. Now, it's interesting, when it comes to using power, the late Christopher Hitchens, who was a, he's died sadly, but he was what I'd call a celebrity atheist. He wrote a book called God's Not Great. And he said that he could never believe in a God because a God who had that much power surely would force and coerce his subjects to believe in him. In other words, he thought God would be like a dictator in the sky. And, you know, as we look around on the news and around the world, that's what you see. You see people using power to coerce and force people to sacrifice their freedom, to submit to what the government wants. And sadly, I think we saw that yesterday and once again in Myanmar, when you had 90 people killed because they don't want to accept the new sort of military dictatorship. And that's what you see. You see governments and people in power using power to force their subjects to conform to their ideology, or sometimes even sacrifice their lives, sending them off to fight a battle. But, you know, if Jesus is shows his power and weakness, how he uses his power, once again, is extraordinary, because Jesus doesn't use his power to coerce people into following him. Instead, he uses his power to sacrifice himself for others. You see, as Jesus is coming to Jerusalem, he's not coming to kick out the Romans. He's actually coming to give his life as a sacrifice for sin. He's coming to die on a cross so that we can have forgiveness with God, and peace with one another. And in fact, it's through that sacrifice that he sets up his kingdom and enables us to be part of that kingdom, that forever kingdom, which one theologian described as a kingdom will be a world of love without all the sin and the mess and the suffering of this world. That is what he uses his power to do, to serve people, to serve us by giving his life for us. And it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. It's completely the opposite of how we think. And this is sort of highlighted to us is at the end of Mark's gospel, that we have Mark paints this picture of this extraordinary scene of a Roman centurion who has literally just executed or seen or supervised the execution of Jesus. And he's looking at Jesus on the cross. And Mark says that the Roman centurion says these words, "Surely this man was the Son of God." And that is such an extraordinary thing to say, because he's acknowledging that, you know, particularly for him, because the Romans were the enemies of the Jewish people. They were the ones who were oppressing the people. And he's saying Jesus, and seeing Jesus at his lowest, you know, Jesus at his death, and calling him a king and calling him a God to be that he wants to align his life with. It's extraordinary because, you know, and actually in those times, Caesar was the only one who was considered to be a divine or a son of God. So he's saying something quite incredible, really. And the reason why is because he's witnessing true power. He's seeing Jesus, who is willingly giving his life for him. And therefore, he's not forced, he willingly gives his life to Jesus. And that's the extraordinary thing with Jesus. As we look at the sacrifice that he does on the cross, as we see him coming in weakness, as we see him using his power to serve us by sacrificing his life for us, we willingly give our lives to him. It is really sort of two ways of using power. One is to force and coerce people into some sort of ideology, or to go along with some ideal, whereas Jesus he uses his power in love to give himself as a willing sacrifice for others. And therefore, people and we willingly give our lives in service to him. And that is true power. And it creates, I guess, one of the greatest kingdoms this world has so far seen. Because if you think about it, at the end of Mark's gospel, you have that one Roman soldier who gives his life to Christ. And it's extraordinary because it's an obscure event. It's a man dying on a cross. But 2,000 years later, we now have people all over the world who have willingly given their lives to Christ. What I enjoy is working at this school is that we have over 40 different nationalities. And I have a small sort of Bible study that I do. But in that Bible study, I've got people from Rwanda, Ghana, Nigeria, China, Hong Kong, Nepal. And they're people who have, they haven't been forced to follow Jesus, but they've willingly given their lives to Jesus because Jesus has willingly given his life for them. And I think my prayer is this, as we go into Easter, as we have this Easter week, is to once again to not take for granted what Jesus has done on the cross, but to see it afresh, to look at the fact that the way that he is a king, but he uses it to serve, he uses his power to serve us, and really to be sort of wooed by that, to once again willingly want to give your life to him. And I guess if you're someone who hasn't yet done that, I just think one of my frustrations is don't make the mistake of what I often get at school, where I see a lot of students and teachers as well who write off Jesus. They have sort of the wrong understanding of him. They don't realize who he is. And therefore, on the basis of ignorance, really, they think that he's not interesting, or they won't sort of show any interest with him. But I hope in Easter, as we look at what Christ has done, as we look at it, how he comes in weakness, how he uses his power to serve us, I hope that would be a chance actually for, if you don't know him, to consider more of him. Think, why has he done that? Now, next week, we'll look at more of, well, what is it, what does Jesus offer us? What does he do next? You know, what does he promise us next week, next Sunday? But we're now going to sing a very famous hymn, which once again talks more of that sacrifice of Jesus using his power to serve us. And it's a great hymn. It's a hymn that I like very much. And it is, There Is a Redeemer. So let us sing that.